Hi, my name is Joan, and I'm an alcoholic. I don't know, did you hear my heart thumping over there? Thump, 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 thump. I don't know why I'm nervous. I look around here, I see a lot of faces that I know. Everybody here at this table I have a connection to in one way or another, and there's people out here that I've worked side by side with, and I have attended meetings with, and certainly have enjoyed the San Diego Spring Roundup with. I want to thank the committee. I want to thank Leah for asking me to do this. I know that this is a tradition for the past chair to come and speak and do the opening meeting. This is the opening meeting. This is the first meeting for the San Diego Spring Roundup. I just know it's going to be a fantastic weekend. I've only been here to the town and country for a couple hours, and I'm already like impressed with everything and just really have gotten into it and have seen so many people that I haven't seen in a while. And that for me is sometimes the fellowship is what it's all about. I know we hear this at meetings. You'll hear a speaker say, oh, I know when I saw so-and-so come into the program. I have to congratulate Leah. I remember when she came on to the Roundup. And I remember she was in printing or something, information. Yeah, it was like, you know, it's one of those jobs that when you are in those positions of chair and co-chair, you're scrambling, trying to get people to get these. They're not the glamorous jobs. They're not the glamorous jobs. But we all have to do them. There's people in this room that are doing some of those non-glamorous jobs. There's trustees from the Roundup here. There's pastors, people have worked. And you know what? It's just what you do to bring this Roundup to our area, to bring it to San Diego on a yearly basis. And we all have to be a part of to be of service. Thought I could get through this without a lot of emotion. I wasn't going to be emotional, but now I am because I want to tell you how my journey started with the Roundup, and that person just walked into the room. I moved to San Diego in 1995, and I didn't really know a lot of people, and I had moved here from St. Thomas and moved to San Diego. I don't know what I did that for. I mean, I do, but you know, I left the island to come here. And I was trying to fit into Alcoholics Anonymous because I needed the program. I'd had the experience of moving to St. Thomas with three months of sobriety under my belt. And, you know, so when they tell you don't make any changes in that first year, what happened for me was I ended up going out down there on the island and coming back in, and I knew I needed to fit in. And somebody took me to the Carlsbad AA workshop up in Carlsbad. If you know that meeting on Thursday night on Harding Street, there's about 200 to 300 people sitting in that meeting. Now, I came from an area where our meetings might have had, you know, 10 people, and that was considered a big meeting. And I walked in there, and I was like, oh, my God. But I went back because there was something happening there. And one day, this gentleman walked up to me and we were introduced. And he said to me, hey, do you know something about computers? And I was like, well, yeah. Okay, 1995, we weren't as technical as we are now. And I said, yes. And he said, how'd you like to help out with registration at the San Diego Spring Roundup? Now, I didn't have a clue what that was, but I know that when I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous, they told me that when I get asked to be of service, that I say yes. So, and that gentleman, Lloyd S., who's a past chair, and it was his year to be chair, I want to thank you, Lloyd, because that question took me onto a journey that I just absolutely would have never imagined. I have no right to be standing here, except for the fact that I'm sober and by the grace of God and for the good heart of a man who said maybe he saw somebody that needed something to do. So thank you, Lloyd. Thank you. And he mentored me and coaxed me to continue on with the Roundup. Oh, my gosh. It was just an incredible thing. When we did that registration, by the way, I want you to know that we used a DOS program. There was no Microsoft Excel or Access or anything. And I lived in North County And I went, as the roundup started getting registrations in that time, I would drive all the way down to off the 52 somewhere to this lady's house. And, you know, I would just input data, your data, into the computer in a DOS program. I hate data entry, okay? I do to this day. But you know what? We did it, and there were long nights, and then I'd go right back up to where I lived up in North County, and boy, we had a great roundup, and I got hooked. I got hooked on what was happening here. I said, I shouldn't probably be here. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a blackout drinker. I don't remember parts of my life. I hear stories about what happened. I know that when I did my ninth step, I made a lot of amends to a lot of people. And some of those amends were accepted, and some weren't. I know we don't typically ask this, but if there's anybody here who's new tonight, I can tell you, and my suggestion would be to go to meetings and get a sponsor and work the steps and try to stick with us. Because there are a lot of gifts. There's a lot of gifts out there that come from being an Alcoholics Anonymous. This spring roundup has given me a ton of friends. Real friends. Real friends. Not friends out there who either were using me or I was using them. True friendships that I can call on or I see and we hug and it's incredible. It's a heart to heart. It's the language of the heart that we speak here. It also had the opportunity to meet my husband. I met my husband through the through the roundup. And I'm not the only person that's ever done this. So ladies, listen. If you're single and you're in the market and you're looking, this is the best place to meet them. And you know, the thing was is that because of that, I met a wonderful man. And I have to tell you, at that the year that I met my husband, I was the registration chair, and a friend of brought him over and said, "Hey, we'd like you to meet this guy." And I'm like, "Hi, my name's Joan. Hi, I'm really busy. I'll see you around." Because if you've been involved and you're doing registration, you're pretty busy, and I don't have time to be flirting around and trying to connect, right? And I don't know, he was persistent. So, Tom, I want to thank you. Actually, he made a comment to me because he came to all the roundups with me. He said, "You know, I've really never got a volunteer, or all I got was a volunteer ribbon." And I said, "Well, guess what? Guess what? We're volunteering at this roundup. He's going to get another one." So, you know, thank you. He's just been there for me, and I appreciate it. One of the things that we do is that we have the traditions in our marriage. We learn that. We learned how to keep sobriety in God, number one, and to maintain our relationship. God knows that we've had our share of non-spiritual relationships in AA. You know, it's just that, you know, I think that for women who are alcoholics, when we get sober and we start going to AA meetings and we start, okay, you know, that 13th step, come on, ladies, we use it too. And I think what happens is that we get so excited to be with a guy who's sober that we don't have to worry about if he's coming home at night or doing that. We get excited. We have to go experiment with several of them too before we find the real one. That was the kind of behavior that I certainly had when I was out there drinking. As I said, I was a blackout drinker. I didn't know how to be of service to anybody. Now, I was in the hotel industry, so I knew what customer service was. I knew that the customer was always right. I knew that I had to say yes, sir, and yes, ma'am, and try to correct problems. But, you know, I did that usually when I was loaded on something. I barely went to work without my first drink in the morning and, you know, other substances, because you'd party all night and then you had to get up the next morning, so you had to have something to keep you going. So I never faced a day or knew how to face a day without having something going on inside that would help me get through it. I didn't really care about that customer service. It's funny because now that I'm sober, I was asked to teach a customer service class, which I can do, but I think I approached that a little bit different than I did when I was actually trying to practice it. Because, you see, it was all about me. It was all about what I could get and where I could get it and how much I took from you or used you or was not concerned about you really didn't matter. I had my share of marriages. That's why I laugh about that. I had my share of marriages before I got married. I learned real quickly how to use people to my advantage, and that just continued on. That just continued. I raised a kid, that poor child. You know, she's okay now. She's okay. She had a mom who wasn't there. It wasn't until I got sober and she relayed some stories to me where she would like be sneaking out at night. I had no idea that that was going on. No idea whatsoever. I stole. I went into your medicine chest. I wanted to see what you had. I would write bad checks. I couldn't go to the laundromat without a half pint of vodka with me. I couldn't go to the grocery store unless I had something going. I don't know when all that happened. I don't know when it happened that in my drinking career that I crossed that line that we hear people talk about, that it became not fun, it became a necessity. It became a necessity. I could not face life unless I had something inside of me to help me dull the pain and to help me cope with life in general. You know, I thought that if I could just go ahead and be that kind of drinker that could go to the bar and I heard a speaker, Charlie Carney, he says it, I can say it too, talk about this where you reach that point where you're right there. I always thought that if I could just go out and drink and reach that point where I felt okay. I felt okay about who I was and who you were, and I was happy, and you wanted to be around me. But every time I tried to do that, I missed the mark. And pretty soon, I was out there either in a passed out or, worse yet, a blackout state. I was coming out of a three-day blackout when I went to my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Three days of not knowing where I'd been, who I'd been with, or what I'd done. That was pretty scary. And that's what got myself to my first AA meeting. That was when I reached out for help. And like I said, I had the great experience of moving in that hotel industry and down to the Caribbean. And rum was a buck a fifth. And oh my God, it was so much drinking going on. People were running away from everything down there. They have a great AA convention down there. One of the ladies here and I were talking about it. It's wonderful if you ever get the opportunity to go, but alcoholism in those islands is very strong because people are running away from the law and the child. The friend.
Maybe I should not let him drive home.
I was really involved and I stopped going to meetings. I had a sponsor who wanted me to do a four-step. And I didn't like that very much. And I was living with a guy who was a known crack dealer on the island. Well, he wasn't drinking, okay? I want to clarify. He didn't drink, but he was smoking crack. But this sponsor lady said, you know, maybe you should, you know, do your four-step and give up the guy. And I got very indignant, like, well, who are you to tell me that? And I'm not going to give him up, and I really didn't want to look at myself, and I had a lot of deep, dark secrets back there. I did a lot of things to a lot of people that I was ashamed of, and I stopped going to meetings. So if you're sitting in this room, well, you're at a meeting now, but if you think that when you're going to walk out, you're like, oh, you know what, I'm not going to be going to any more of those AA meetings, please be warned, please, because my lack of meetings was my lack of resistance to when the opportunity came, just like it says in the book. There is nothing between us and that next drink, drug, or whatever it is that you're going to go out there and experiment with. Because my relationship with God was absolutely not there. Now, I had thought I had. They told me to be of service. They told me to be of service. I did all those things that you told me to do when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous. But you see, my ego was such that I really wanted to impress you. So I was making sure that if I was cleaning up or putting chairs away or people smoked back then, I wanted to make sure you were seeing me do it and that you were approving of the way I was doing my service to the meeting. They once gave me the cake commitment, and there's people in this room who have heard this story before. They gave me the cake commitment, and down there they did a little bit different than we do here. At the end of the month, or maybe some meetings do this, at the end of the month they had a big birthday for everybody who had the month or the birthday for that month, and I was to bring the birthday cake. Well, I worked at this big fancy hotel, so I got in with the pastry chef and said, you know what? We didn't have Costco's down there or anything, but you know, I gotta have the best birthday cake ever to take to this meeting. Now, this chef had no idea it was going to an AA meeting, not at all. He thought I was like part of some social group or whatever. So it was going along pretty good, and then one month I brought the cake in. It was a beautiful cake, and boy, you were loving me because I was bringing you great cakes because that was my ego kicking in there. And finally, you know what? A little bit after they cut the cake, someone came up to me and said, Joan, do you know about this cake? And I said, yeah, isn't it great? They go, well, it's a rum cake. I was like, whoa. Now, they use real rum in those cakes down there. And I was kicked off that commitment. I don't know. I guess maybe they just thought they better give to somebody else who would maybe bake a cake. I don't know. But, you know, it wasn't about being of service. It was just like when I had that customer service position when I was working. It was all about how good did I look. So when I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous, my second time around, which, by the way, my sobriety date is May 16th, 1994, when I came back to AA, I knew that I needed to be of real service. And something inside of me had to change. Something inside of me had to change. And I went ahead and I had to ask for willingness to work this program that I saw working for all of you. Now, I actually, we had to get a lot of speaker tapes, like we're taping all the speakers this weekend, and I probably there's some of the speakers who are going to follow in the weekend in this room, and I'm so honored to be one of among them, and I'm really looking forward to meeting them all. Some of them I have heard sitting just like you all are sitting and hearing them, and I'm very excited to
sheriff because the sheriff and I had already had a few run-ins, and I
schools for 12 years. That's not my excuse for being an alcoholic, but I went to Catholic schools and was driven by the nuns. And Sister B talked about praying for willingness, and I thought, oh my God, the nun had to pray for willingness. Well, maybe if she had to do it, I ought to try it. So I would get on my knees every day and ask God for willingness to work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So when I had that new attitude about coming in and being sober and working a program and being of service, I came in thinking more about you than about me. And when I took my very first commitment was actually the greeting line at that Carlsbad meeting where they have, like, it's like going through the gauntlet, like the, you know, the college guys that come out in the football game. You're going through the gauntlet there. But I stood there at that greeting line and I shook hands with people that I didn't know. Some I did, some don't like me, some I don't want to have coffee with. It didn't matter. We were all there for an AA meeting. You know, they told me, by the way, when I got sober here that I didn't have to like everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, I don't have to break bread with everybody, but I have to be there if somebody reaches out to me for help. And for that, I have a deep, deep, different kind of love for the people in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have, so after that commitment of standing in the greeting line, that meeting became my home group for about 12, 13 years. And it was there, again, that Lloyd had asked me, do you want to be a part of this, a part of the beauty of this? I am so pleased to see all these people here. I said, oh, there won't be anybody there. It's the opening meeting. But I want to just share a little bit of experience of what, if you have never been to the San Diego Spring Roundup, of what's in store for you. I expect all of you will be deep sea fishing at 5:45 in the morning. Actually, the deep sea, one of the gals was in the room here that a couple years ago actually won. She never went fishing before in her life, and she actually got the biggest fish. Now, that had to be thrilling. There's a great 5K, 10K that's going to be happening that I understand starting right outside where the registration tables are on Saturday morning. I'll be volunteering there, so I expect to see you all there bright and early, walking around. I know there's a golf tournament for the golfers. It's always very, very, very popular. I know that there's great banquets, great food, marathon meetings. There's Al-Anon. There's Alateen. People are saying yay for Al-Anon. Yes, yay for Al-Anon. We need you. We need you. And if you, I went back to college, just went back to college. At my age, 15 years sober, decided to go back to school. I'm taking Spanish. So I want to say, if you hablas español, I think that's the way you conjugate that. I'm not sure. Darn. Anyway, if you... they have Espanol in Al-Anon, so we cover a lot of bases here. We have the opportunity to really be involved in the fellowship. I don't know if they were talking about this at your meetings in the months prior. I'm an intergroup rep, or was an intergroup rep, and I talk about this at intergroup, and I talked about it at my meetings, because one of the things that I say is if you want to see a few thousand alcoholics, Al-Anons, and Alateens getting along, then you need to go down there and experience what's going on. I think that this is the place that we take back some of this that we get out of here. You know, it's a program of giving back. I think we get the opportunity to take some of this back with us to our home groups and back to alcoholics who can't be here. Now, I don't know about this one, but I certainly suggest that if you have somebody who couldn't be at this roundup, go ahead and take them a speaker tape that's really, really impressed you or you really got something out of, because that's called carrying the message. If somebody carried that message to me, the first time that I came to an AA meeting, when I was coming out of that three-day blackout, I don't know how I knew that a guy that I worked with was in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew that we would have these employee little parties and things, and this guy would drink Coca-Cola, and we would all be drinking beer. I didn't like beer because I always had my own half pint with me anyway. I either had it in my purse or I got sober for the first time in the state of Michigan, which is kind of cool in the wintertime because you have to wear a coat. You just make sure that your coat has an inside pocket right here so that you can put your bottle in there. I can't tell you how many times in the dead of winter I tried to throw that half pint out the window without putting the window down. I'm lucky I'm not cut up in my face. I'm lucky to be here because there's a lot of things that I did that I shouldn't even be alive today. There are a lot of things that I did to my body, that I put myself in situations that I should be dead or locked up forever. When I say I was a blackout drinker, I know I drove drunk and I don't even know how I got home. By the grace of God, apparently, by the grace of God, and God had a plan for me, I'm here today, that I'm able to stand here in front of all of you and say, hey, you know what? I am a sober woman of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I knew that guy was where I was supposed to go, and he was an engineer. He was the assistant chief engineer of a big hotel, and I knocked on his office, and I said, his name was Bill, and I said, Bill, you know what? I think I might have a drinking problem. And true as you hear people say, he was like, oh, I'm glad you came to me. He had this big smile, and he said, I'm going to get you to an AA meeting. And he goes, that's how I stay sober. He goes, would it be okay if I have a woman call you? Now, I had a hangover. You know what, ladies and gentlemen? I had such a hangover that the only thing that I knew that would help me was a shot of vodka. I didn't think that this lady's phone call was going to help me at all. But something inside of this ego, stubbornness, I'm going to do it my way, I'm a woman of the 90s, don't you know, I went through that Gloria Steinem age, you know, hey, women's lib, I know all that. Something inside of me said, you know, yeah, would you have her call me? So the lady called me about 100 times. 100 times at my work. I was happened to be in a management position. I don't even know how that happened. I was... Oh, my God. I never lost a job from alcoholism. But she called me in my office and said, you'll be there, you're going to be there. Yeah, I'm going to be there, I'm going to be there. And I walked into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was a little bit different there. This was in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So if you're from the Midwest, you might know how they do their meetings a little bit different. And I was a little bit late. And there was somebody who was reciting, who was talking. And I thought, oh, this is like, you know, Hamlet's soliloquy or something. I didn't know what was going on. And course to find out it was how it works. But you know, they did something at that meeting that I kind of wish that we would do a little bit more of. I was a newcomer, and I don't know what the format was for that meeting, but they immediately changed that meeting over to a newcomer's meeting and talked about the first step. And I wish that we would do that more, no matter if it's a big book or a 12 and 12 or whatever. I guess you can do it in a speaker meeting. But, you know, I think if it's a discussion meeting and there's a newcomer, it's nice to really talk about step one. And I'm so grateful they did, because they started talking about things that I understood. And that lady after the meeting sat down with me, and she gave me a copy of the big book. And she said, would you mind if I write in this book? And I said, no, go ahead. And I'm still, my head's pounding and feeling sick. And you know that feeling, like, oh, God, I just want to go to bed now. And she opened it up to page 83, and she marked right there where the promises start. She says, you need to read this, because this will happen for you. And I'm reading through it and going, wow, this sounds great. Now, she failed to tell me you had to do 9 steps to get there, okay? But... I'm very fortunate. Those promises have come through. And and sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, like it says. But the most important one is that God has done for me what I cannot do for myself. It took me a lot of years to learn how to get out of the way and let that happen. And once in a while, I still get in the way, and God still has to put a 2x4 over my head and say, hey, wait a minute, wasn't the deal that you step back and I'm in charge? That happens, but I'm getting better at it. I'm getting better at it. So if you have a problem with that because you're still struggling a little bit with that part of sobriety, don't worry. It'll come. It kind of comes the same way we walk into our first meeting. It comes because we surrender and we get desperate. And it's like, okay, I understand. I understand. You take it. You take it. My life's a lot easier when I do that. I'm so grateful. I know that I have to I want to wrap it up, because I hope that for sure you're all going to the ice cream social. That's a great event. A part of that, actually, when I was on the committee, we did some discussing. I don't know how many years you've all been coming, but we used to go on a harbor cruise. Remember a harbor cruise out on a harbor on a hornblower or whatever was there? And a lot of people stopped going, and, you know, it got cold. It would have been very cold tonight. And we thought, what can we come up with something that's new and different? Now, wait a minute. If you don't like the ice cream social, then I didn't have any part of it. But it's been fun. I know in the years that I was involved, we had some really funny comedians, and they're all on the program. So you know what? There's a part that we talk about, we're not a glum lot, and we get the opportunity to laugh at ourselves. We get an opportunity to laugh with somebody else about them sharing their story. And we get to say, it's okay. It's okay to laugh. It took me a while to learn that. I was so down. I was so broken. And it took me a while to laugh. I have a sponsor who kind of lets me remember that once in a while. Anyway, she's a short little Mexican lady with about 45 years of sobriety. Oh, my God, you know. I mean, I don't laugh a lot with her because she's always calling me on my stuff. I don't know how she does it over the telephone. How do you sponsors do that over the telephone to know exactly what I really am trying to say? How do you know when I'm lying? Because I'm trying to smile. They taught me that. Smile at the telephone and that voice comes through. I'm incredibly blessed. And here's what I want to say about this, about what we're all doing here this weekend. I said take it back, take back the feeling, take back the excitement of Alcoholics Anonymous. But the main thing is that we have to keep AA real. We have to keep it pure, and we have to remember what our primary purpose is here. You know, we have to remember that we have to be there for the people that come behind us. I don't know what I would have done without the old comers. I don't know what I would have done without the Lloyds and without the people that were there for me. But I just know that my job is to be there for the others, because they have to have some hope too. And if I could just reach out to one person and have them go and feel as great as I do about Alcoholics Anonymous, then I know that I've done God's work. Because every day I get up and say, okay, what can I do for you today? I happen to be an event planner. I get to still be of service to people. That's my job. And I'm around a lot of alcohol, and I get to see a lot of people do some stupid things. I walk out of there with gratitude every single time. For the grace of God, there goes I. And if I can be of service to them, and I can be of service to my community, and if I can be of service to the lady who's at the line at the grocery store, you know, the one that comes in with the big basket and the 10 item, if I can tell her, go ahead, I'm not going to say anything to you this time, you know, because if I was drinking, I'd be all over you. And if I can be of service to the people and the community of Alcoholics Anonymous and be part of the fellowship, then I don't have to worry about anything. I just have to worry about staying sober, keeping God number one, being nice to my husband, yeah, and carrying the message. Thank you.